Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with North State and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wickman.
Netflix has released a documentary film about automobile mogul John DeLorean. My guest today narrates a portion of that documentary because he was arrested as a defendant in the John Z. DeLorean cocaine smuggling case. Stephen Arrington is a Vietnam War vet and bomb disposal frogman who had worked with the CIA and Secret Service on top secret operations, but a marijuana mistake caused his fall from the rank of heroes. Previous books written by Stephen Arrington are Extreme and Journey into Darkness. His new book is In DeLorean's Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century by the Sole Surviving Defendant. It's a story about hope that never surrenders. In 2017, President Obama awarded Stephen Arrington a full and unconditional pardon. Stephen Arrington, welcome.
Nancy, it's a pleasure to be back on the bookshelf with you.
Well, the title of your book tells us that you are the sole surviving defendant in the drug trial of the century. And you already wrote two previous books. Why did you write this third book, Stephen?
Well, Nancy, actually, I've written six books. I've written a high-end adventure series for youth. But the reason I've been locked down with COVID, like everybody else, and my autobiography, I learned to writing an autobiography. And the title I originally wanted was In DeLorean's Shadow. But my publisher, they didn't think I had written enough about John DeLorean, and they were right. And so they wanted me to call it Journey into Darkness. And then I got the rights back and I changed it to Extreme, but it didn't really tell the story. I needed to be In DeLorean's Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century by the Sole Surviving Survivor. And that defines a lot about what the book, you know, why I wrote it and what I'm trying to accomplish. Because a bottom line, Nancy, is John DeLorean, in my opinion, and I was there, was innocent of a drug crime. I'm not saying he was an innocent man. I'm saying he was innocent of a drug crime, which is what the case was all about. And so I really wanted to prove that. The other thing is that I went to prison and the FBI really wanted me to cooperate. And they do that through threatening and coercion. And I was facing 144 years in prison if I didn't cooperate. And in the end, I wound up, because I want to get into what people really want to hear about, so I'm going to leave a lot of the upfront stuff off. In the end, I pled guilty, and I only testified against myself. And Nancy, I was facing at that point up to 30 years in prison. And the judge, he had gotten a lot of letters on me. He knew my military background. He knew that I made a huge mistake. But what he appreciated is that I took responsibility. It was my fault. A man by the name of Morgan Hetrick, who had been a father figure to me and a mentor when I got out of the Navy under a cloud of shame because I had transferred 2 ounces of marijuana in a sting operation. And I was amongst the ranks of heroes, of bomb disposal, Navy bomb disposal frogmen. And I fell from that group of honorable men like a rocket-assisted elevator down. And I thought my life was over when I got out of the Navy. And Morgan offered me a job as a pilot, as a right-hand man. But what I didn't know is that he had become the number one cocaine transporter in the United States, particularly for the West Coast area. And when he revealed that he was a cocaine transporter and he wanted me to co-pilot a plane to Colombia, I refused. I told him, no, I didn't want anything to do it. I just wanted out. But foolish me didn't immediately walk away. So there were things wrong with Stephen Arrington.
My guest is Stephen Arrington, and his new book is In DeLorean's Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century by the Sole Surviving Defendant. And I mentioned that Netflix has released a documentary film about John DeLorean called Myth and Mogul. But there have been other movies too, and you list those in the front of your book. So if somebody wanted to find out more about this case, what are some of the movies they could seek out?
Well, Framing DeLorean is a very good one because they interviewed a lot of the people that were involved. There's one called Driven, but that was a dark comedy and it's not true. And the Myth and Mogul, John Z. DeLorean by Netflix, it was done by Fired Up Productions, and they did an amazing job. There's so many things that were never known about the DeLorean case. And they had over 30 hours of footage that had never been shown. And the cameraman who did the work is an Academy Award winning camera person. And they had all this footage that was originally designed to promote the DeLorean and John DeLorean, but now it's effective in telling his story. And then the other thing they do, and wow, I produce modest documentaries, but they brought in an artist who would draw scenes, and you would suddenly have a one picture tells 1,000 words, and you'd see him actually drawing it there, you know, graphically happening really quick, and it ties it together. And so they're having all this footage, and then this is the first documentary that Christina Ferrari agreed to participate in, as did John DeLorean's son, Zach. And so there, you're getting the first tier witnesses of what happened in the DeLorean motor car and the John DeLorean drug case.
Now, you mentioned Framing DeLorean. I happen to have seen that and enjoyed it. It was a docudrama because they would intersperse Alec Baldwin in the role of John DeLorean with actual footage. But the one that you just referred to, the Netflix, I thought it was so well done. I watched it twice. Three episodes, but I just found it so engrossing that I watched it three times.
Okay, I was waiting for that. Because I have, people are talking, you know, they're calling me up. Hey, Steve, I saw you on TV. The thing of it is most people are watching it two and three times. After you watch it once, you got to go, wait, I've missed stuff. Because they bring so much out and you have to really focus on it. And you watch it the second time and it's so well done. Well, I'm going to watch it a third time. I'm on my fourth time.
Well, it is well done, but it is so complicated. And you, in your book, you tell this complicated story. So, Stephen, how can you convey to listeners right now this story of what actually happened in this drug case?
Well, I think we have to start a little bit earlier. As I said, when I went to work for Morgan Hetrick, I did not know that he was a cocaine transporter. When he told me he was a cocaine transporter, he ordered me to co-pilot a plane to Colombia. I refused. And you know what, maybe Nancy, you had talked to me about reading a little part from the book. Would that be helpful right about now?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Let's do that. What's happened is Morgan has revealed he's a cocaine transporter, and he's taken me, I'm driving, and we've gone to the Sheraton Plaza Hotel by the Los Angeles airport. And I'm scared because he's told me what he's doing. He put a gun in my hand and he said, we're gonna collect a lot of money, $700,000, and the guns to make sure nobody takes it away. And I refused to take the gun. I threw the gun on the bed. I unloaded it, stripped it down, tossed it. I didn't want anything to do with this. I didn't know how, you know, I was an idiot. I thought I was a smart guy. No, I was an idiot. And so we leave the hotel room and we go deeper into the hotel. And so that's where I'll pick up the story. I'm on page 2 of the book, actually. We walk deeper into the hotel. Morgan stops at a door, knocks once sharply, then twice more softly. The door swings inward. A large, muscular Latin man stands just inside. Heavy scarring mars his face as if someone once ran upon it with spiked track shoes. He is dressed all in black, including the automatic pistol in his hand, a MAC-10. He uses the gun to wave us into the room. Against the wall are two more men with guns. But the most threatening of all is a man standing in the room's center, his empty hand extended in greeting. Morgan strides to him, grasps his hand, Max, this is Steve. He's my right-hand man. I trust him with my life. The salutation impresses Max. I watch his hooded eyes as his hand takes mine. Morgan has told me a lot about you, he said, tightening his grip on my hand. I am very aware of the man in black behind me with the MAC-10. I glance at the other two men, one of which is leaning against the wall. He's wearing a white t-shirt with an automatic and a shoulder holster. Max's grip pulls my eyes back to him. Morgan said that you're an ex-frogman, an expert of weapons and explosives. Max has not yet let go of my hand. It is as if he is tugging at my soul. Do any time in Vietnam? He asks, releasing my hand. 4 tours, mostly with the fleet, rescuing downed pilots. Kill anyone? No. Sweat gathers at my armpits. He nods towards the Colombian, casually leaning against the wall. He has, and so has Rodrigo, standing behind you. Rodrigo, the man in black, holds up 4 fingers. Max's eyes cut back to me. So you know how this works. All my boys are shooters, but they love their knives. You understand? My mind boggled at the death threat so casually flicked in my direction. One of the men picks up a heavy suitcase and drops it onto the bed. Max opens it. It is full of bundled bills. 700,000 times, just like last time, said Max. Morgan grins at the stack of bills. Bring the suitcase, Steve, he said, heading for the door. Max moves aside as I lift the heavy luggage. I glance at the two shoulders against the wall. They smile, like hunters sizing up game. At the door, I turn and look at Max. It dawns on me as I return his ice-cold stare that he is waiting to see if I would look back at him or to scurry out the door like a cowed dog. This was one of the scariest moments of my life. This is where I lost control of who I was completely. Before, I lost so much. A 14-year career as a Navy bomb disposal frogman, working with the CIA, the Secret Service, working on secret military operations, saving lives. And I lost that. And I thought, I've fallen so far. And now I've fallen into darkness.
My guest is Stephen Arrington, and his book is In DeLorean's Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century, Told by the Sole Surviving Defendant. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Stephen Arrington, and his book is In DeLorean's Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century by the Sole Surviving Defendant.
It was all my own fault. I didn't go looking for this. It found me. I worked for a man as corrupt. I saw his corruption, and I still chose to work for him. Marijuana is prevalent now. There's very few rules and regulations against it. But back then, in 1980, when I got busted with it, I had a top secret nuclear weapon, CNWDI, critical nuclear weapon information clearance. And you can't have one of those if you're smoking marijuana. And I got an honorable discharge. I didn't know it was I was gonna get an honorable. In fact, I didn't know it for a long, long time because I thought I got a BCD. But that's another story. It's in the book. I was a beaten down person when I got out of the military. I had failed And I was working at a surf shop for minimum wage because I wanted to be able to surf and go to San Diego State University. And that's how Morgan found me. And in 1982, he offered to hire me as a pilot, as a right-hand man, for start me off at $50,000 a year. He said, one day I'll make you executive vice president. And anyway, in about 6 months, I'll double your salary and then we'll double it again. Nobody offers you something like that unless there's something that you should really know.
Yeah, you should have seen a red flag. But this is a guy who had taken, you taught him scuba diving. He had been a student of yours in scuba diving. So we can kind of understand that you would be trusting. He comes in and says, hey, Steve, I've got this great offer for you. And it was not what he described.
No, in fact, something about Morgan, he was a con man all of his life, all of his adult life. And he was a smuggler for most of his adult life. And a con man knows, you know, it's a craft. And they learn how to manipulate. And when you're in a good place in life, when you are focused on doing good and being a good person, you're the hardest kind of person to actually con. But you can still get conned by really good con artists. And the thing about the DeLorean case and the DeLorean trial is it was full of con artists. And this is what people love in movies, is they love to see one person trying to con somebody else, and you know, and it goes all these different webs and everything else. The thing about the DeLorean case, it was so convoluted. It's really hard to try to nail down what all's happening and who it's happening to. And I guess maybe that's what we should start with next.
Yeah, well, how do you unravel this convoluted story, Steve?
Well, for me, I was ordered to co-pilot a plane to Colombia, brought back 650 pounds of cocaine, scared to death. I was then ordered to drive a car from Florida to California. And in driving that car, I realized I needed escape. So instead of delivering it, I abandoned it. I called my boss up, Morgan. I said, I quit. I'm walking away. He told me to meet him at the Sheraton Hotel with the car.
Now, I don't think you mentioned what was in this car.
Oh, well, you're right. There was 55 pounds of cocaine in that car. And this was raw, pure stuff from Colombia. That's what I was supposed to deliver to the hotel. I didn't take it to the hotel. I went to the hotel and I tried to put the keys in Morgan's hand, said, I'm walking away. And he said, no, you're not. Two men walked up on either side of me. And one of them was James Timothy Hoffman. And the other one was a undercover DEA agent. And he's pretending to be Tony, the crazed Colombian hitman. And they have me drive him to the car. And when we get to the car, I'm suddenly see a dozen men come running out of the darkness, and I'm arrested. And I was scared to death. I think I had a dozen guns, shotguns, rifles, pistols on me. And when they yelled, federal agents, you're under arrest, my heart, it was just like, oh my, this is the best thing that could happen to me. These are the good guys. I'm not going into a grave. I'm going to jail. And I was okay with it at that moment. And the arresting agent said, well, I guess this isn't the best day in your life, is it, scumbag? And I said, actually, I think it is. And his name was Gerald Scotty. And then he took me to an FBI facility. And that's when he laid out all my offenses that they added up to 144 years. And if I didn't cooperate, I was going to prison for a long, long time. But I had already determined I wanted my life back. And so I made a determination that I wouldn't testify but against anybody but myself. And off I went into the federal prison system. And we were a long, long time getting to trial. This was such a big case. There was so much going on. And John DeLorean, he very early realized that Morgan Hetrick was going to flip on him. Morgan was not going to do prison time if he didn't have to. And the other thing is that his real sons were involved and he wanted to protect them. And it became very apparent that he was cutting a deal with the government. And I would go to court where there are three of us defendants, and I'm the lowest guy on the totem pole.
You might describe the front page of the LA Times on the day you were arrested.
Well, the day I was arrested, I didn't make the front page. It was when John DeLorean got
arrested. DeLorean
was
arrested, yes.
And then when he got arrested, that was huge news. And then the next day, October the 20th, then all three of us were on the front page. And that
photographs. You
know, well, and there was more than that. I'm glad you brought this up, Nancy, because also on that page, when I was arrested, President Reagan, one of my heroes in life, who I wanted as a father figure, I used to watch him on 20 Mule Team Borax. He's standing open arms, talking to the Colombian president. And I'm thinking, oh, I wish I could be in that picture instead of the picture that I'm actually in.
Going to say that probably just comes as a surprise to readers. What, Reagan's involved in this case and Margaret Thatcher? But anyway, I digress. Back to your story, Stephen.
Well, Morgan wanted me to cooperate. John DeLorean didn't want me to cooperate. And I was sitting there with my defense attorney, and over half a year has gone by, and it's on television every single night. And I go to court, and I'm sitting there, and I'm at the end of a table with my attorney sitting next to me. And across from me is Morgan Hetrick sitting with his attorney and another attorney. And then John DeLorean sitting catty corner from me. He has four attorneys and there's six people sitting at the table. And one of the assistants stands up, walks over and whispers in my attorney's ear. And my attorney, Rick Barnett, looked at me and he said, Steve, you want to meet John DeLorean? I said, what? He said, do you want to meet John DeLorean? And I go, sure. And so I stand up with the assistant who walks me over towards John DeLorean's table. John DeLorean stands up and walks and we meet. The prosecutor is sitting there. The guards are there. The judge is not there yet. The jury, which is, I consider the real journey was the press because the courtroom was completely full. It's the largest courtroom at the federal court building. And when we meet, and John and I start to talk, and the reason why we are talking is he said he had heard good things about me, and he wanted to know something. Are you going to go to trial? And I said, I will do what my attorney recommends, but I will not testify against anybody. And he said, that's what I wanted to hear. And he was leaning in and he was whispering in my ear. Nobody could hear what we were saying. And then he went back to his table. I went back to my table. My attorney asked what was going on and I told him. And then John DeLorean merged his defense with mine. And he paid an incredible amount of money to have everybody in the case investigated, the FBI, the DEA, James Timothy Hoffman, the informant. And he gave all those files to my attorney to aid in my defense. Now, the next thing that happened is we're getting closer to when something's going to have to happen. And I'm in my jail unit. I was in jail unit 3. Morgan Hetrick was in jail unit 2 at Terminal Island Federal Prison. I didn't want to see him. I didn't want anything to do with him. And suddenly, the guard brings in two new inmates into our cell block, and one of them is Morgan Hetrick. We are now going to be in this a 28-person cell block. We are going to be together constantly. And I wondered, why is this happening? And Morgan told me that the FBI wanted me to cooperate. They had sent in an undercover FBI agent to threaten me while I was in prison to tell me I need to cooperate and why. He revealed a whole bunch of stuff of what was going on with the case, background stuff. To show me that I didn't have a case, that I was going to go down, and I was going to go down hard. I was going to get busted for the 650 pounds of cocaine I flew. This is why I was facing 144 years. And now they send in Morgan. And Morgan's job is to convince me to cooperate. And you know what Morgan said? He didn't want me to cooperate. He wanted to talk to me to make sure that I didn't cooperate because he thought that'd be bad for his sons, but there's something else. I'm now going to reveal things that were never came out in the John DeLorean drug trial. They weren't revealed to the jury and they weren't revealed to the audience. And most of the FBI doesn't know a lot of what I'm going to tell you right now. So are you ready for that?
Ready.
Morgan Hetrick was a con with James Timothy Hoffman, the informant in the case.
The super con.
And what he had done is he had been working for the FBI out in New York over 20 years earlier. And he had done all these things for them because he was a smuggler. I believe he was a murderer. There's evidence that I have in files. When I say stuff like this, I have the evidence. And my evidence has been reviewed by the number one historian for John DeLorean and for the DeLorean Museum. They've seen my files, not all of them, but they've authenticated them. And James Timothy Hoffman ran what he was a crook. And he thought so much of himself. He wanted to con people who thought they were smarter than him. And he got transferred over to Los Angeles because too many people were looking to kill him. And they gave him the new name, James Timothy Hoffman. And what he would do is he would run a case for the FBI or for the DEA, and he would arrange to steal some of the drugs or some of the money and sell it. And you go, well, how could he get away with it? He got away with it repeatedly. And he'd be caught up in a trial. And he's the defendant. And the prosecutor comes in to talk to, with an FBI agent to talk to the, an FBI agent comes in to talk to the prosecutor in the case and says, look, we need to drop this. And he's going, why? And he says, because there's a bigger case going on that Hoffman's involved in, and this is a small fry thing. So let's have him we'll make up a document that James Timothy Hoffman agrees that he'll never steal, he'll never do more drugs again, and erase his past. And the prosecutor does it, and the judge does it. And he did that repeatedly. When I say repeatedly, in January of 1982, I have one of those letters in my possession of him promising that he would no longer do smuggle drugs and sell drugs, and so that he would be freed from that case. And that's just less than a year before the DeLorean trial.
Let me remind people that we're talking to Stephen Arrington. He is a local writer, lives in Paradise. And as I'm reading your story, there's so many times when it would have been so much easier, Stephen, to just go along with everybody wanted you to do. Say, okay, I'll do what you want me to do. But you did not do that. You did the right thing. And to me, that showed tremendous courage. And I thought, where did this courage come from? And then I looked back and read some of the things that you did in your training to become the hero, really, that you were in all these instances. And I thought, boy, that took courage. I mean, how people wash out of that program being a Navy frogman, not just anybody can do that. So many more people attempt it than succeed. And so I thought, well, he had a history of being a courageous man.
I need to put this in perspective because there's a lie to that. And that is when I was a Navy bomb disposal frogman, and I was with my team, men, because we didn't have any women in the teams at the time. The men that you would, our creed was no man left behind. If they're killed, you'll carry them out. Okay, all right. So, Nancy, I call it a lie because I thought I was courageous. The thing of it is it's easy to be courageous when you're surrounded by a team and you're doing good things, you're doing good work, and you take pride in your team, you take pride in yourself. But when I got caught up with the Medellin drug cartel and I'm around murderers and killers and smugglers, that courage went away. I became weak. I lost my focus. And that is why I needed to go to prison. I needed to get my focus back. And what happened next was the most dramatic moment in my life up to then.
We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. Thank you. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with Paradise author Stephen Arrington, who wrote a book, In DeLorean's Shadow, about how he got caught up in the drug trial of the century. And there are so many twists and turns in this story, Stephen. What do we need to know about this story?
Well, there is so much to this story, Nancy, we will never be able to give one third of the mysteries and the secrets of the John DeLorean trial, which is a great segue to say it's all in the book. You can get it's everything is there. You'll probably have to listen to this interview twice to get all this because it's so convoluted. But Nancy, for me, you mentioned that I was a courageous person. That was in the past. When you're a bomb disposal frogman, you work with a team, you can have courage. But courage is based on character. And I had become addicted to marijuana while I was a nuclear weapons bomb disposal frogman. And if you compromise your character, you compromise your courage. And so when I was in J3 and I'm dealing with all of this, something had happened to me. And that is, I realized that all of this was my own fault. And out of desperation, I gave what I thought was a worthless life to Jesus Christ and made a commitment for the rest of my life, I would do nothing but good. And Nancy, that's what gave me back my courage. You see, I knew I wasn't going to testify against anybody. I was just waiting for my chance to plead guilty. I just needed to try to get a deal where I wouldn't be in prison forever. And I could never have done that without my character changing. And Morgan manipulated because of my character. And so John DeLorean wanted me to go to trial so that he could learn everything about what the government had. Morgan Hetrick wanted me to go to trial because he wanted me to destroy James Timothy Hoffman's in the courtroom. You see, James Timothy Hoffman and Morgan Hetrick had been con artists together for a lot more than 10 years, more like 20 years. And Hoffman conned Morgan Hetrick. He conned him out of $100,000 and Morgan hated him. Now, 10 years after that con, Morgan Hetrick is under investigation by the DEA and the FBI over money laundering. And James Timothy Hoffman is in that office. He's working. This is his job. He is a working snitch. And he gets to see the files that come in. And when he saw that the Ventura City Police, the chief, was investigating Morgan and asking for help on money laundering, Hoffman goes, wait a minute. I know this man. I can deliver him. And so they put him up against Morgan Hetrick, saying to help him launder money and everything else. And Morgan told me, be careful of James Timothy Hoffman. You can't trust him. He's a master con artist. And so this is me in prison. And Morgan says, Steve, I'm going to tell you everything I know because I want you to destroy him. And he gave me facts of the case that had come up in the investigation. And we had the files from John DeLorean, who had been doing investigations. And so here's what happened in the DeLorean case. Is DeLorean was being sought by the British government because he embezzled $18 million, the money they gave him for DeLorean, and he put it into a secret account. This is evidence. This happened. You can see it in the Netflix documentary. They outline it quite well. And Margaret Thatcher wanted his head on her wall. And her good buddy, Ronnie Reagan, was eager to help her. And he had Edwin Meese put together a joint task force to oversee all the law enforcement agencies. And the message to them was, get DeLorean. And you know what? They had nothing on DeLorean. They couldn't get him. But Hoffman's in the office. He's reading the files. And he sees John DeLorean's name. And he sees that they want him. And he said, hey, Gerald Scotti, Agent Scotti, I can deliver John DeLorean because I was his neighbor. And we were friends. He lived in the same community. And so they, like a laser, they set him after John DeLorean. He met John DeLorean in a bar. He was told by Hoffman that I can get you $60 million, but I need $1.8 million seed money. I need money from you. Now, right then and there, you can see a con being set up. Now, amazingly, this is the introduction. This is where the FBI and the DEA are sending in an informant. He had a tape, he had a wire, and for some reason it never got turned on. They do not have the transcript of what was said. But he comes back and he says that John DeLorean wants to invest $1.8 million to buy either cocaine or heroin. John DeLorean never said that. This was a con man setting somebody up. And they had many, many, many conversations. Then it comes out that the money, the investors that Hoffman is lining up are Colombians. And whoa, right off the bat, John DeLorean knows this is drugs. And he wants out. And what happens is Hoffman threatens John DeLorean's daughter. And John DeLorean, what's he going to do now? So John DeLorean came up with a plan. He said, you know what? The $1.8 million, I don't have it anymore. That was from the IRA. The IRA were going to back me. And they pulled the money out. It had to go someplace else. I don't have the money. It means the deal's closed. And the FBI says, no, there's another way we can do this. And so the best way for me to describe this, because this is very convoluted, is imagine a poker table in a dark room. And James Timothy Hoffman is dealing the cards. He's the dealer. He's dealing from the top of the deck and the bottom of the deck. Sitting on his left and his right is Tiza, FBI agent, Gerald Scotti, DEA agent. They put in the pot $1.8 million. That is the buy-in. The man I worked for, Morgan Hetrick, he had me deliver 55 pounds of cocaine. He pushes the 55 pounds of cocaine into the pot because that money is to pay for that cocaine. John DeLorean doesn't have $1.8 million, but he puts in the VINs for 40 DeLorean motor cars, which was requested by the FBI. And he had 40 DeLorean motor cars moved to his house in Southern California to do the deal. But that wasn't enough money. So he put in 50% of the stock of DeLorean Motor Car, DMC. And the government accepts that. The problem is that was a shell. It was worth nothing. DeLorean Motor Company is where the DeLorean car was. John DeLorean's pulling a con. The thing of it is the DEA and the FBI know they're being conned, but they want John DeLorean. But now they come up with a little side deal. And the side deal is that they want to get more money. And Hoffman, he skims a part of anything that he gets as a snitch. He pulls money, he pulls drugs, he turns it into cash, he's staying in really nice hotels. This guy made more money by far than Gerald Scotti, the agent who was handling him in the year 1981 and 82. Scotti did not like the stitch at all, but they want to get more money in. And so Hoffman comes up with the idea, and the FBI loves it. The bottom line on this whole case is Hoffman is running the case. He's calling the shots. He's driving the car, and the FBI, DEA, and DOJ is in the back seat, and they're just along for the ride. And what he says is, look, there's a lot of money here that we can get. Morgan Hetrick is connected to Pablo Escobar. And what we should do is get Morgan's money by having him invest $30 million into DMC, and we can get Pablo to invest in DMC. My boss, Morgan Hetrick, says, I'll put in 15, but I'm going to go to a South Pacific island and meet with the top people. And he comes back and he says that Pablo Escobar is ready to put $60 million of his own money into DMC, the real DMC. And his number one, Max Mermelstein, the number one man for him, who's smuggled 600 tons of marijuana into the United States and sent an incredible amount of money out. He and the number one hitman for the Medellin cartel, Rafa, they're going to come up with the last $25 million. They're going to put $100 million into DeLorean Motor Car because DeLorean Motor DMC, because most of the money that Pablo Escobar got out of cocaine came out of the United States. He wants to extend out over into Europe. He believes that DeLorean has connections with the IRA. That'd be an interesting way to field money in that direction. And so I have the files that show all these conversations. This is what's going on. And Morgan is telling me at this table, the bets are going on and there's one more thing that's going into the pot. And I said, what's that? He said, Steve, you're going into the pot. I said, wait a minute. I don't have $1.8 million. He said, Steve, if you don't cooperate, they are going to send you away to prison for life. Are you willing to do that? That is what I was facing. And an FBI agent told me that if I did not cooperate, that they were going to bury me. And they had the 650-pound airplane trip. They had the 55 pounds of cocaine I drove. The actual conspiracy was 1,225 pounds of cocaine. That is where I had to find the courage to trust that if I did what was right, if I was a good, if I tried to be a good person, that I would be taken care of. And so they moved, you know, having DeLorean wanting to help fund me, my defense, having Morgan Hetrick trying to manipulate me wasn't going to happen. I had my plan, and Nancy, I was going to stick with it.
My guest is Stephen Arrington, and he is telling us the story of how he got involved in the drug trial of the century, which was against John DeLorean. The book is titled In DeLorean's Shadow. And just in case people missed it, this plot, I'm referring to it as a plot, was involving Margaret Thatcher, who was mad at John DeLorean. I'm going to say mad at him. So she asked her friend Ronald Reagan, and they're going to make sure that DeLorean makes good for... Did Margaret Thatcher know that DeLorean embezzled money, or did she just...
Yeah, no, absolutely they knew it. They were investigating him. That's why she wanted DeLorean back in her in the United Kingdom so she could arrest him. She arrested his a man from Lotus who also took some of the money. She put him in jail. He died in jail. They were trying to get DeLorean back. They couldn't get DeLorean back so that she could arrest him. And so they're doing anything to build a case. The FBI, the DEA have been directed. And now when DeLorean tries to pull out, an FBI agent threatens his children. That's coercion. There's a couple of felonies wrapped up in there. And so now we're all under arrest. I'm going to be the first one going to trial. I go to trial. I told the judge, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. There's a lot more to it than that. But the bottom line is that I wanted to be a good person and I fell. And the prosecution wanted me to get this incredible long sentence. And I told the judge in a letter that I felt I deserved to do 5 years. Because if I did 5 years, it means that I could come out as me. Longer than that, I'm not sure I could come out as me. And a lot of people wrote letters in. Long story short, he gave me 2 5-year sentences to be served consecutive. I got 5 years. I got what I asked for. And that made that time doable. And when John DeLorean went to court, the FBI lied in court and got caught. I can't go into the details because we don't have enough time.
But it's in the book.
It's in the book. They lied. He perjured himself. They put false data down there. They said that they were not rewarding the snitch. The judge Takasugi, called Hoffman a bandit, that he was just stealing money from the government. And he's a horrible witness, and the jury hated him. And also Gerald Scotti, the agent who arrested me, he's mad at the FBI because he knows they're violating federal law. And so they put Gerald Scotti under investigation for the Grandma Mafia case and tax evasion, and he resigned from the DEA and became a witness for the defense. Does it get any crazier than this? And so John DeLorean was found innocent because they built the case around him, against him. It was so orchestrated, the jury ruled him an innocent man on all counts. However, the point of it is he was financially destroyed. His wife had lost all confidence in him. She left him and took the children, and he loses almost all of his finances. He loses his company. He even says to people, would you buy a used car from me? And he winds up earning money by selling watches on the internet. And then when he passed away the rebel he always was. He was buried in jeans, motorcycle boots, and a leather jacket. And he was destroyed.
Well, you were just saying that John DeLorean was found not guilty of these particular charges, But it is clear that he was not Lily White, that he was a con man too. And he did things in his background that were not laudable. But he wasn't guilty of the charges in this particular trial.
Exactly. And by the way, a couple of FBI agents should have gone to prison. James Timothy Hoffman should have gone back to prison. And Morgan Hetrick, when he went to be sentenced, he cooperated against Max Mermelstein. And by giving them Max Mermelstein, Max created 26, he cooperated, gave him 26 cases. He brought in an incredible amount of money. He brought in cases. He's the one responsible for bringing evidence of how Barry Seal was killed, because he set that up for Pablo. And the Manuel Noriega, well, he went to prison because of Max Mermelstein. And Morgan Hetrick, he got 10 years. He served five. And what was amazing is he died a hero. He was teaching kids in a high school in like Kentucky or Tennessee to fly. And one of them made a mistake, flipped the plane down, clipped a wing on a telephone wire. Morgan took control of the plane, crashed his side down. The plane caught on fire. The three boys got out. Morgan burned. And over 500 people came to honor him at his funeral.
Yeah, that was a sweet ending to his story, Stephen, because Morgan was, I think he really liked you. He wanted the best for you. It came across that way to me. Would you say that's true?
You know, I would, but he cared about himself more. When he sent me down to Columbia in an airplane, that plane was sabotaged. I didn't know it. We almost died. We lost an engine. We went into a death spiral and because somebody had backed off the nut of the gasoline going to the heater. And I now suspect it was Morgan Hetrick who did that, because that would not be the first plane that he crashed on purpose. So he cared about me, but he had a black heart.
Yeah, that part was scary when you're not flying the plane. There's another guy flying the plane, but you almost did not survive that plane trip down to Columbia. That was scary. There's so many things that were going on in your life, like when you went to prison. Oh, that was hard to read. The conditions in prisons, what we do to inmates. And you were saying that if you stay longer than 5 years, you might not like the person you turned out to be. And I could see why. Prison is...
Nancy, I believe now in hope that never surrenders. My hope is my character. It is who I am. And I trusted in God, and things happened I couldn't believe. Imagine what it was like to become an inmate firefighter and then chief engineer of a fire crew and leading the response to the first B-1A supersonic bomber to crash, went down 6 miles from Mojave prison camp. Boron, and I drove the fire truck. And because of my background, my team, my EOD team 11, our specialty was aircraft carriers, military aircraft. I was one of the best persons who could be there. This plane crashed in the desert, and inmates were the first one on the scene, and we saved two crew members. One died. When you're a felon, you wear your sins on the outside in your prison coveralls. I got to put on firefighter turnouts. I put on the uniform of a hero. Those were garments of salvation for me. It gave me purpose and meaning in prison. And when I got out of prison, I went to work at a commercial diving college as an instructor. I saved the life of a young man, and I got the highest award from the Red Cross for life-saving. And then I get hired by Jacques Cousteau and his son Jean-Michel. I go on a 5.5-year odyssey, diving with whales and dolphins and sharks. And what God was giving me is he was giving me material to talk to kids. Whales, dolphins, and sharks. Oh my, crazy inmates, wacko guards, macho FBI agents. I can talk to all that about kids as I talk to them about choices. And after doing 3,700 plus assemblies, President Barack Obama gives me a full and unconditional pardon. My life is so good. I am so blessed. People say, now I'm an ex-felon. I'm a felon for life. I'm an ex-inmate. I have my childhood dreams given to me 2 years out of prison.
Well, when somebody referred to you as lucky, Stephen, you replied, I'm blessed. And that was nice. Rather than choose to say you're lucky, you choose to say you're blessed. And at one point in your book, you say there are two basic paths in life, the right path and the wrong path. One leads to happiness, wonder, love, and light. The other is a journey into darkness, which was the original title for this book. You were originally going to call this book Journey into Darkness, and you instead called it In DeLorean Shadow. And you talk about that dark journey down a slippery slope. And in that same section of your book, you say that you weren't arrested, you were saved from a life that was out of control. And you say that a path you wouldn't have sought for yourself. I'm the one who sold marijuana to friends. And then you also say that along the way, there are friends who want to help you on your journey. And that resonated with me, Stephen, this idea that there along the way, there are friends who want to help you. And I've discovered not just friends, but strangers. Strangers come along to help me just when I need that help that they can provide. So I think people will enjoy your book on so many levels, Stephen. And you make the point in your book about hope. And I think you probably might like to leave listeners with that idea that your story is a story about hope that never surrenders.
And the difference between luck and a blessing is luck is happenstance. Purposeful is from God to, blessed is purposeful from God to you.
Thank you so much for telling us your story, Stephen.
Thank you for having me, Nancy.
Remind listeners that my guest has been Stephen Arrington. His newest book is In DeLorean Shadow, The Drug Trial of the Century by the Sole Surviving Defendant.
Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.